That's right, because in the end, we've had a fabulous,
run.
Inconceivable, just falling knives from the sky.
You're talking about like the perfect storm of the last year.
Yeah, no, it's the perfect storm of the last 10 years.
Oh, okay.
I could go off on this. We've done a fabulous job in the this is important to keep in mind, in developed nations where you have good smartphone penetration and good postpaid. All right? In those markets, we have destroyed value perception of mobile in the fight to obtain subscribers across back and forth. And we have used every lever possible to do that.
And gigabytes are devalued, aren't they? I mean, you talked about a kilobyte being
everything.
£10 yeah. or whatever.
Are you referring to sort of commoditization and basically,
totally.
Basically yeah. sort of feeding the dumb pipe perception?
Well, I don't really give a shit about the dumb pipe.
What do you get?
To you as a consumer.
But what do you get, Scott Pum?
Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. I'm in a slightly different position on what may or may not be a shittier camera.
Your old position.
My old position. Yeah. Because we got a guest this week, as promised.
Yay.
We've got the incomparable Mary Clark. He's been on the pod, two or three times, is it?
Easily
two or three times, but not for quite a long time. Obviously,
no!
Because no one's been allowed to leave the house.
No one can go anywhere. But yeah, I'm here. I made it.
Well done. And it's brilliant to have you here.
No, I'm thrilled. This is awesome.
And so we're going to talk about Mary stuff.
Cool.
We can ask you about things like Mobile World Congress and all that sort of thing, because you went and we couldn't be asked. What else has been going on? We've been watching the tennis, haven't we?
Yeah.
Emma Raducanu. By the time this goes out, we'll know if she's a Grand Slam winner.
Mm-hmm. No. Is it today? Is today the final?
No. But we publish it
by the time, yeah.
Yes.
This is Friday.
Yeah.
Saturday night, 9 o'clock UK time.
She is killing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it, you know, a lot over the last, when it was the 16. And
yeah. Well, the other girls as equally as young
and they both look even younger than they are.
Yeah. Well, I think Fernandez in particular is really baby face.
I know, they all look like 13-year-olds. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
I know. And they're playing these 25-year-old women who are looking grizzled by comparison
and slightly pissed off.
I mean, great. I'll take the grizzled look in a heartbeat. But I mean, it is. But they're doing
look grizzled.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, see, thank you for that. But no, it's good tennis.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, they're both really good players. That's the thing. It's not like a fluke. They play
kicking ass. I mean, she hasn't lost a set.
Yeah,
I know. Every time anybody says that, I'm like, you know, that's just, we're just waiting for that.
Well, I checked the scores this morning because I think it was 1:15 in the morning UK time.
Yeah,
and I woke up and looked at the score and I was thinking Sakari's like strong, and I just thought that'd be too much for her. 6-1, 6-4.
I know.
It's like what's going on?
It is. Anyway, we're probably cursing her because this will go out and look like.
Well, I don't think it. To be honest with you, runners-up spot for someone who went through qualifying
and was
350 in the world before the tournament is.
But you always want more, don't you?
300 early in the year. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you do, but it's still amazing.
So that's all good. Mm. What else? So we went out after the last pod. We went out and had a bit of a work get-together.
Mm-hmm.
Ray came out.
Oh, I missed Ray.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'd love to see Ray.
That turncoat.
Oh, stop.
Turncoat Lemaitre. Thinks he's cute because he can get a telecom TV.
I don't think you're a turncoat.
I don't know if he ever... Have you ever asked him if he ever listens to the pod? I don't think he listens to the pod when he worked.
I met him twice last week, once at the a Vodafone press conference and also at our thing. And I hardly said a thing to him.
I just ended up
at the opposite end of the table. And then by the time I was thinking I should chat to Ray, he was off.
Yeah.
And I sort of, I'll have to do another one soon. But.
You had a chat with Ray, didn't you?
Yeah, I was sitting next to him.
So he's good, I presume.
He's doing good, yeah.
He looked fine.
Yeah.
I just didn't get a chat to. I know, it's just bad form.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you're listening, Ray, it was great to see you. If not, chat to you. And that's okay. Well, I'll stop talking shit now. We are going to talk about... We're going to start off... We haven't even decided what the topic is. We're going to start with a Mary catch-up.
Sure.
And we'll just decide after the event, Pierre, what the prevalent topic was on that one. And then we're going to move on. We're going to talk about roaming, which I know is in your wheelhouse anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And Ian and I both wrote about three charging for European roaming.
I might name it Roaming Betrayal.
Marine Betrayal, yeah. Pierre's not happy because he's A, a three customer, and B, has a stake in being able to roam in Europe, even more than the rest of us.
And when you think that it's got to be 10 years, maybe no, probably longer, 12, 13 years, they were the first operator to declare no roaming within like
that's
a
certain... That's why I picked them.
Even when the roaming was still in place.
Even when it was still in place, they used it as a competitive
advantage. They swallowed it, which is why I think this is such a weird move for them and one that won't work out, actually.
Especially when they're like, okay, no roaming in the US. That was huge.
Oh, it's huge.
I mean, the thing is, this is what I was talking about it, so... Let's
yeah, we're screwing.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, before we get into that, I did that last week. I steamed into it,
and it's just on my fault again.
And I think we're going to finish off if we have time, just a little more of a sort of fun bit. A couple of stories I've written this week about big internet companies getting into devices. Mm. Amazon's making a telly.
Really?
Yeah, Facebook's making some shades that you can film people with, and
with Ray-Ban.
And it all just feeds into a sort of overarching narrative on this pod of big tech is just bloody scary and they've got too much power.
Monitron.
Yeah, exactly. The Monitron 4000.
Could I be the American capitalist in the room for you?
Did you? Yeah. Please do push back.
What's Amazon doing?
Well, we're going to get to that, isn't it?
But what's
a
the TV.
TV?
Yeah, a TV that's got Alexa in it. Right. So you don't even need to have remote control.
You
can
TV
just go,
device.
Alexa, put something on and then just sit there.
But they already have the Amazon Fire thing.
You don't have to use energy on the
exactly. You don't have to. You don't have to burn those thumb
that's
calories.
That's good because that's hard work.
It's a fucking nightmare, isn't it? Thank God they've solved that.
But now all you got to do is hold it and talk to it.
You don't have to hold anything.
I know.
You just go telly.
Play something nice.
Telly. Soothe my pain until I go to bed.
I love the idea of just yelling at it. Telly, you know. And then you can have, like, if you're in the UK, call me telly. You know, if you're in the US, call me TV.
You sort of localize it. Yeah.
Go to that colloquial thing for how to describe the damn TV.
So, yeah, it's solving all sorts of first world problems, this thing.
Jeez.
So we'll talk about it at the end. And then just to remind you that if you're watching it on the site or on Facebook or on YouTube, you can listen to it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and loads of other platforms. I think I didn't fuck that up.
That's like the small print bit, isn't it?
Just catching on to last week's theme, you seem to have done that very well, even though you are going to be 50 soon. So.
Oh, I know. Wow. Do you know what a gutting thing is that you're not around? I'm having a big 50th bash.
No!
Yeah, but it's on the 9th of October. My birthday's the next day. We're gonna go to... I know, I feel like Joe Rogan wouldn't say this because people would all turn up. Look, you crazy fanboy telecoms.com podcast listeners, don't be turning up for my birthday. This is an invitation. We're going to go to Ceviche in Soho.
Oh, nice.
Like a Peruvian restaurant.
Yeah.
And then just right over the road, there's this really cool cocktail bar called the Arts Club Bar.
Mm.
And it's downstairs and it's all in the style of a speakeasy.
Fabulous.
You can even get cocktails served up in teapots.
Oh, fantastic.
And we got that till 3 a.m, so it could get proper messy.
It may just be as well that I'm not coming.
Yeah. I know you can manage a 3 a.m. shift.
Yeah, you know I can. It doesn't mean I should.
Cool. Hydrating now already.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you want to pile on those electrolytes starting now.
Yeah. Mary, why don't we just have... So times you've been on the pod before, first time you worked for Cineverse.
Mm-hmm.
And then you worked for Synchronos.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember joking on one pod, your next job's got to be something beginning with SYN.
Yeah, that's never going to happen again.
That's never gonna happen. Partly because you've run out of company.
Yeah, thank God on that. But yeah, that was just a little too weird, SYN.
Too much SYN.
Two in a row. Sin.
And so you're not...
Says it all.
And you're not Synchronos anymore. So what have you been doing since then?
I am free. Fancy
just,
free.
Just doing your thing.
Yeah, I'm looking for a job. I mean, that's the thing. I've been consulting, which, you know, I value everyone that I've been working with. I want to make that very clear. But I'm learning about myself. This is the first time I've ever been in this position.
Right.
I'm not good at telling people what they should do. Right, I'm good at telling people this is what we're going to do, you know. And
so you're like
executing.
Ordering rather than advising.
Yeah, it's kind of like I see, you know, the variations of people and their responses to, you know, the work that I'll be involved in, and no, this is not long.
So when
you
you've been acting as a consultant, have you?
Yeah, so I helped a company in the fall into the spring in mobile services. helped them for about 6 months, have been helping the private equity firm that I'm an advisor to, Astor Capital Management.
Okay.
They're great guys, and they have a couple of portfolio companies I've been helping one of them.
I know how much you love private equity firms in general.
You know I do. I mean, it's a love...
Love relationship.
That's it.
I'm not going to entrap you into being indiscreet.
Thank you. But I certainly know them, right? So that I can say that. So I've been doing that. But as of late, so I'm going to hit these two things because they are telecoms really pertinent. So I've been an advisor to Link Global, which, this is elegant, right? For some reason, whenever I talk about a phone, I have to have it in my hand.
Okay.
This becomes a satellite phone with no changes.
Yeah, so you mentioned that just before when we were chatting, before we started recording. And I was just showing, again, my sort of lack of professionalism in really understanding subject matter. You'd think I would have got a grip on in the last 7 years.
It's okay.
But I was like, how's that different from OneWeb, Starlink, LEO stuff? And you were like, it goes straight to your phone. It hadn't even occurred to me when I've been writing about them that these are basically sort of relays to a, I don't know, what is essentially a terrestrial base station.
That phone is causing interferences, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, is it really? I'm moving it.
Can't hold it too close to the mic.
Yeah.
But that's not what they do, whereas what you're talking about is straight from a satellite to a phone, like in back in the day when you'd have a brick or whatever.
That's right, yeah.
But presumably it works on a regular phone.
It works we're testing right now on the satellite that they put up in late June. And it's working.
What kind of orbit is the satellite?
It's all low Earth orbit.
Oh, it's still LEO.
It's LEO. And what their secret sauce is Link has – they took a cell site, right? They cracked it open and they said, all right, how much of this could we harden and put in space so that you put the entire base station in the air? And that's what they've done. And so they've now got five up, and the most recent one is testing and – we're registering phones. We've proven a broadcast cell phone communication directly from, a satellite directly down to a set of phones. And it's spoofing the phone. Yeah. It's essentially saying to the phone, yeah, we're only about 30 miles away.
And what's the opportunity? Because obviously this failed the first time around when Iridium tried to do it, partly because terrestrial came along and was a lot cheaper. And now we're in a market where almost everybody has a terrestrial handset, and there's not that much that's uncovered.
And look, and let's keep in mind, right? I was working at Cell One Washington Baltimore in 93, right? So I know how excited we were about D-amps, and I know all the people that got sucked into that, a lot of the people into that $5 billion hole in Iridium. What is elegant about what they've got is that technology plus the fact that they're producing their own satellites.
Yep.
And they're taking advantage of something that is really kind of the first in history, which is we've got this low-cost entry to space. So we're using SpaceX to launch these satellites, which, by the way, are about the size of this table. They're so totally cool. I mean, there's like a big pizza box. I saw what was inside it. It was really super cool. And because they're manufacturing it, they have the ability to control and tweak.
So SpaceX involvement is with the rocket itself.
But the rocket itself, the cost of this, it used to be millions of dollars to put stuff in space.
Billions, I would have thought.
Now we're like down into...
Just to reuse.
Sorry, honey. Yeah. That's a huge thing. Mm. I mean, the advances that Elon has made in,
these are the ones that land like something out of Star Wars.
Half of it gets destroyed, but the other half...
Lands itself and goes right.
I mean,
satellite.
And they can get 10... I think 10 launches up and down for each one. So, this is a really important kind of shift, right? We're at that shift where you have this low-cost entry to space. You have the technology that has been identified for, connecting the phone directly to the satellite. Yeah, you had a pad fall down to you. and then you also have the fact that these guys control their own manufacturing costs.
I thought he was going to give me a massage.
I love the fact that Mary was talking then. So not only did the wall fall off and Pierre had to put it up, but he had to walk in front of the camera that was live to do it. That's what a professional outfit.
And all I did was explain what was going on. So,
most
I think
people listen anyway. So.
I listen.
Now they know
when
what
I listen to the pod.
I've heard Elon.
No, I had a question about what's battery life on the phone?
Well, the battery life on the phone. So imagine today, right? If you were to streaming something from this kind of a circumstance, it's the battery life that you have on your own phone now, right? So if you just bought a brand new phone, your battery life is going to be pretty good. You get this phone.
But doesn't the chip spank the battery a bit?
It's, yeah. It's yeah, of course it's going to some degree, but it's still thinking that it's only 30 miles away.
Oh, I see. That's the...
It's not thinking that it's a satellite phone. It's not
So it's not like
changing.
The 5G antenna that's consuming a lot.
No.
Sorry, you probably just explained that and I maybe got distracted by the wall. Why does it think it's only 30 miles away?
Because that's how it's capable of connecting the device directly to the satellite. That is their patented technology that's doing that.
So it's treating it like a regular base station.
That's right. So this is why, you know, I'm spending time on this.
And that's within the satellite itself, the technology that does
that.
That's so it wouldn't interact with any ground infrastructure at all.
Essentially, the only stuff they have on the ground is like the equivalent of a knock.
Yeah.
So whenever they need to communicate, just as you would to a satellite, you know, to a terrestrial network, and you got to upgrade your software there, they just have knocks on the ground to do it up to the satellite.
Do they think they can compete on service against people who've are already providing mobile phone services?
So this is another reason why I like this. It's because it's an elegant solution to people that have not got enough coverage physically.
Right.
So Nigeria is a perfect example. There are essentially three large cities in Nigeria, and the operators there are capable of covering it and are covering 95 or 90 plus percent of their population, right? But only 48% of the whole country is covered.
Mm.
Wow. Right? Because you have this population density issue.
Yep. Which I didn't know. It's 200 million people.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, Nigeria is
what? It's easily the most populous African country.
Well,
isn't it?
It's certainly up there. But it's the one to me, because again, I've spent enough time on this and I'm not working for them right now. You know, but I've been engaged with the opportunity.
You're plugging someone who's not even paying you right now.
I know.
That's what a pro you are.
I know.
Or
I
not.
Know.
Or maybe that's not very professional.
I know. I'm trying not to think about that at 3 a.m, Scott.
Can't you just retrospectively going, look, surely you can chuck me a few bucks for this. Come on.
Anyway, they're coming into the operator and signing a roaming deal.
Yep.
And say, we'll just be a part of your network.
Okay.
See, right?
And they provide the coverage in the areas where the operators
So they just add in, so they just become another part
They're like the Heineken equivalent for, you know.
So plugging the
holes. How does their business model coexist, if at all, with the standard LEO OneWeb? It's a direct competitor.
No, because those guys are selling Wi-Fi in the sky. You got to have a thing that attaches to some building that's the size of this table that is fixed. And so OneWeb communicates down to that and, you know, and Starlink communicates to that. Mm. And they're $500. And, of course, Elon says they cost $1,000, but I'm selling them cheaper, which is, you've seen all of those numbers.
And it's $100 a month. It's expensive.
Yeah, and this is built into, you know, however the operator wants to market this, right? So, remarkably, you know, there is still, because so many of these places are going to be prepaid that need this kind of coverage. Because we're still talking about 2.5 billion people that have no coverage, that have no coverage at all, right? So there's a market.
Just a bit.
Yep. And it's developing nations.
Most of them are pretty skint, but nonetheless, it's a market.
But the reality is that, you know, if we're not coming in hot with this huge expense, right, and there's a model that is taking advantage of all of the inflections that are happening. So it's the low cost access to space, and it's this technology, and the fact that they control the actual construction of the satellites. I mean, this is, you know, it lines up, and it's synergistic with the operators. They're selling connectivity, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you're asking the operator to sell something that they don't already
sell. Well, that's one that occurs to me about this. I mean, on one level, I'm trying to look for the catch, because right now there doesn't seem to be a catch, but maybe you're not the person to ask, because you've been sort of working on their behalf. But the other thing that occurs to me, and feel free to take that challenge if you want to.
Sure.
But the other thing that occurs to me, it sounds like this company, what are they called? LinkedIn?
Link. L-Y-N-K.
L-Y-N-K.
Global.
Mm-hmm. I worry about them getting bought by Facebook or something.
Well, you're worried about that because you're worried about Facebook.
Exactly. Obviously, if I was the CEO of Link, I'd be like, bring it on. But no, but as a neutral third party, because Facebook's been talking about the next billion for quite a long time, and they're involved a hell of a lot in TIP and other.
Which I've always found a little bit.
I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
But you know, they're more proactive in connectivity than you would intuitively think a social media company would be. And I could just imagine them buying up something like this, and because it sort of fits in with their connectivity portfolio.
I mean, I would have thought the worry at the moment is there's quite a lot of hype about satellite, isn't there? Everybody's talking about satellite. I mean, this sounds a little bit different because, as you say, there's a bit of a USP there, I can see. And it's not like they're trying to do what Iridium was talking about, which is to cover the entire planet. You know, it is quite a small opportunity, and if they can do that profitably, then great. But on the other hand, everybody seems to be talking about satellite. I mean, in some parts of the satellite market, it's hard to see how all these opportunities will, how all these different companies will coexist. I think there's going to be some consolidation. And
there has to be.
You know, I mean, OneWeb seems to be doing, to me, quite a similar thing to Starlink, for instance.
Oh, yeah, it's the exact same.
It's not like they're in different markets. No. It's up in space.
And given that the UK government's involved in it, they're the front runner for going down the toilet.
The UK government versus Elon Musk.
Do you know what I mean?
Don't know.
Yeah. Bojo versus Muskie.
Bojo versus Muskie.
I know
Muskie.
Where my money is. Yes, well, it's a satellite. This is all trying to get that. Musk just like, what
that was
the
good.
Fuck is wrong with you?
That was good. Yeah, you just got to mess up your hair some more.
He sounds like that anyway. Yeah,
too much gel in there.
Too much product. So anyway, it's been totally cool. I've been learning a lot. Because I've been a mobile person forever, and now I'm interacting with all these folks that have, like, you know, been in space and
must be interesting, isn't it?
Well, you know,
sort of getting involved in different stuff.
So, like, one of the things that comes to mind, right, is if you tried to launch something into space up until like 20 years ago, it was illegal, right? You could be arrested. Because
right, Lisa, you can't just be lobbing stuff up there.
Right. So they actually helped, the group that I'm working with, some of the folks that are involved, helped to actually write the legislation that allowed private access to space. It ultimately allowed Elon and...
Right.
Space and, traffic.
Yeah, space traffic to actually occur.
Yeah.
And so space now traffic. To be at this, you know, sort of point where it's not that expensive to get stuff into the air... It's super cool. So, I mean, I just like the place that it's at.
A gravity scenario.
You're worried about space debris.
Yeah.
Yeah, George it's like, clearly getting struck up there.
Like the little pull-out quote you put in the trailer for the pod last week about the Vodafone guy worrying about shit falling off the side of buildings onto people's heads. Well, that's nothing compared to a satellite falling on your head.
Well, that'd be much worse. It would explode and hopefully burn out. Yeah. Although The Walking Dead, remember that episode?
No, it's not The Walking Dead.
Was there a satellite that fell in The Walking Dead?
In the forest. Nobody died.
And it's the forest, so, yeah. You know, it's not...
No, but it usually...
If we can guarantee they're just going to fall in Siberia, then I'm all right.
They only burn out because they're not maintained.
Like. I'm more worried about your 60-kilogram 5G cell phones falling over something than I am for a satellite coming out of the sky.
That would be bad.
That would be bad.
Well, that does sound genuinely interesting, and I'll to my shame, I hadn't heard of them until now, but I'll keep my eyes.
No, you actually wrote about them about a year ago, so it's okay.
But like me with my own byline.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. There you go. That's why we call ourselves messengers, not experts.
So that's been one thing, and then the other thing is... I got involved with a company called MediaLink, who I just love, and they've been wonderful to me. I was a client for a long time. They're a little boutique consulting firm. Sit in the middle of publishing, advertising, and media. They had a project come up last summer for the Thames Estuary Growth Board.
Right.
So that's here. And
do we need to grow the Thames Estuary? I think it's fine.
It's lovely. No.
It's a classic estuary.
It might grow.
The exam question was, okay, how do we help ensure that there is the best possible infrastructure for digital, and that's encompassing data centers, broadband, mobile, in the Thames Estuary? All of it, not just little pockets, not just where there's new houses.
Kent, Essex, East London, all that.
Yeah, so we're talking about South Essex, North Kent, and East London, 20 local authorities all involved. So we're just finishing the first stage of that. It's been fascinating, absolutely fascinating. The people I've had the opportunity to talk to, oh my God.
So why is the Thames Estuary talking at all, let alone to people like you? I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, it's fine.
About this sort of thing. I mean, is this one of these sort of a bunch of like incubator types and regional development types have got together and gone, let's just make this part of the world grow and proliferate?
Yeah. So if you think about it, the UK post-Brexit has a handful of areas that they're saying, okay, how can we drive and develop growth in these what had previously called, you know, you know, it's not de rigueur to say depressed, but that's essentially what they are. And now they're just using that term, we have to level up. That's the more recent term that's being used.
Yeah, I've been to Essex. I'll
yeah,
go with that.
Exactly.
Sorry, Essex.
And so, you know, these places have not gotten the kinds of investment in digital, you know, that other places have gotten. So your whole Oxbridge area is,
yeah,
you know, fantastic.
Silicon Fen and all that.
Yeah, your Slough, your Bristol. I mean, you know, Brighton's even gotten, you know, some good stuff recently. So, I mean, it's – and I've become way more immersed in this than I ever thought I would be.
Well, you're quite
say.
Good because, I mean, what people – I don't know if we've ever – anyway, it's been a while since we did a pod, but you're you're a bit of an Anglophile.
I'm an Anglophile,
in general,
yeah.
But
I mean,
also,
I lived here as a little
kid,
exactly. You know.
You've
so,
also got plenty of, it's not like you just coming over every now and then.
No, I mean, I lived here from 75 to 78, and then I have managed teams and had jobs that have been located here since 98.
Yeah. You're like the Gillian Anderson of telecom.
That's cool.
But I imagine also for sort of full-blown Yanks, you can sort of translate a bit and go, look, this is where they're coming from. Don't take it personally. They're just a bit weird.
It's basically like New Jersey.
Camden, New Jersey, essentially.
Something like that.
Which state are you from again?
Where am I from?
She's from Maryland, of course.
Oh, Maryland.
Where
Annapolis,
else?
Annapolis, Maryland. I it's all about the branding for me, right? You know, what can mm-hmm. I say? Anyway, so I've been helping
I'm trying to think
this...
of other states you wouldn't want to go from if you derived your name from them. Anyway, I'll get back to that.
Yeah. So
you see me drifting off. I'm trying to work on a joke.
This is the 50s hitting again. But no, that's been a fascinating activity because there's a lot of work to do and there's a lot of opportunity and there's things that are happening. And I'll just mention a couple of these because I think this is all about, you know, you've got the Lower Thames Crossing, which is a tunnel that could be built further out. There's the London Resort, which you guys hadn't really heard about, which is going to be in Swanscombe, which is going to be about the size of Disney. Swanscombe.
Is that South Essex?
That's North Kent. That's North Kent.
Swanscombe.
It's an interesting, if you're looking at the river, it kind of makes a point about halfway, halfway down, it kind of comes up the riverbank on the North Kent
like
side.
Like Gravesend and that sort of thing?
Further.
Right.
Gravesend, it's probably a little bit just short of Gravesend, but on the lower coastal line.
And
across from Tilbury.
They're doing a great big resort there. Uh-huh. Why?
Because they can. What,
just because they can. So this is all feeding into my narrative that I really like going on about because it annoys so many people about Brexit and why it's a positive because there's so many people, as I'm sure you're probably aware, but you're not as immersed in it, that are still, you know, 5 years after the vote, a year after it, or several months after it finally completed, are still just clinging on. People like Andrew Adonis, who just like every time someone farts in Harrogate, they're like, well, that wouldn't have happened if we're still in Europe. And there's all that sort of thing going on. And
I mean, look.
It's becoming the thanks Obama, you know, like,
well,
thanks Brexit.
Yeah, thanks Brexit.
Oh, the lights are out. Oh, thanks Brexit.
And yet here we are, you know, but at least I admit my bias. But here you are coming out with something that flatters my bias quite well of us. And I'm pleased to hear it because, I mean, right now, the Tory government, for example, I'm not going to get deeply into this, but they're dropping the ball left, right and centre. You know, they're locking everyone down. They're charging everyone more tax. They're not behaving like fucking Tories at all.
Yeah, I picked a hell of a week to get here.
Yes, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's good to hear. However, I don't know how much the central government, how much credit they deserve for this bit, but it's good to hear there is some of this post-Brexit, okay, let's seize the opportunity, because that was all the rhetoric.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone's going, bollocks, that's never going to happen. So I'm pleased that it is happening to some extent.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and this was the central government-initiated growth board, right? And one of the first things that got announced, and they've got a website, TEGB, or Thames Estuary Growth, I think, is the name of the website, .org. And, you know, they got designated the Freeport in Tilbury and
remind
you know,
us,
Ford. And
your understanding of what a Freeport means.
So a Freeport is really just a designation for an existing port that has the opportunity to transit lower duty or no duty related goods. And they also get slightly more improved opportunity to have ships come in and out.
Right.
And so it's
a kind of like a regulation, low tax burden.
Yeah. So it's got a little bit of a tax benefit to it. But another way to think about it that I equated it, that made it easy for me, was almost like when you have airports that become hubs and others that are not, you become a little bit more, you know, the planning commission around the areas all have bought into this. There is the willingness to have the kind of traffic and have the kind of infrastructure that's needed to support it. So all of that's helpful. So they get, you know, even the local residents and all of that kind of get a benefit.
Well, I was going to say, because that's the incentive of doing it, is not so much necessarily the tithe you get of the business that goes through, because half the point is that you've got a lower burden on those who come through.
Yeah.
But the mere fact that there is that activity is going to generate secondary stuff.
And there's more to it that I'm certain I'm underplaying. No, you know what I mean?
But I don't want this to be the...
But I mean,
Freeport 101.
What I'm liking about this whole project is that, one, it's got an opportunity to do good. Two, I'm learning just a ton about, you know, and much more than I ever wanted to about local government in the UK.
Stuff doesn't belong in your head. You probably know more than I do about it.
Oh, I'd lay money.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you right now.
You could put that on the list of other shit you know more about.
Yeah, well, you know, but it's been super fun, and we've written a huge couple of documents and engaged with a company called Everbridge to actually build a real live tool. Because this is the one thing, and then I'll stop. Is everything that's been done when you think about OpenReach and CityFibre and Virgin, right? These guys own pretty much the majority of the ducks that have been dropped for all the broadband in the area, right? And Ofcom's going to come up with their update to the report that they do on an annual basis next week. You guys wrote about it yesterday. I think Mary did yesterday,
right? The broadband thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and they're talking about the fact that, boy, we're doing great on, you know, super fast and ultra fast, which I now know very distinctly what the differences are between that, right?
I know. It's a stupidly overblown terminology, isn't it?
It's branding 101, right? This is good. This is a little bit better.
But why start at super?
But you want to say essentially they all suck. Yeah. Okay, let's be clear. If you have more than one person on one device in the house, you're screwed. Mm. So, you know, from my point of view, what needs to be constantly highlighted is that fiber to the home is a myth unless you are in houses that are just being built or you have engaged specifically to have it dropped as a commercial enterprise.
Otherwise, it's in the cabinet.
Yes, to Medway City Center, right, which is a whole new brilliant thing that's being built in Medway, is all getting wonderful fiber. But that's because one of these guys said, oh, the business case for this works.
Right.
Right? Yep. But that's what we're left with. So Ofcom and everybody can say to them, BT can say, I'm dropping this many houses. This is how much it's going to have gigabit speed. This is, you know, millions of houses, blah, 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 blah. They're making the call where it goes. They're the ones building that business case, as opposed to saying, okay, what if we were to give you access to the entire estuary? What would you do differently? Because in my mind, this is a land grab. If you were to look at it really, over the next, you know, 10 years, 15 years, the people that can look at this and actually implement broadband, mobile, and data centers in that area, there's...
Yeah.
This is the good.
That's a really good point about the data center part of it, and that obviously needs the best...
Yeah.
Connectivity.
I mean, there's only, when you think about the tier four data centers in London, you know, which is like the biggest, you know, the AWS kind of ones that, you know, support AWS, there's only probably about 10, you know, and then you go further out east, forget it, you know. So, no, I've learned a lot about this, and I think that there's a huge opportunity.
Interesting being schooled on UK stuff by an American.
I know, I thought about that as I was coming in. I thought, oh, this will be fun. Yeah. So anyway, I'm done. You can move on.
No, that's cool. And that, it was really good to hear about it. And obviously, it's out of left field. It's not the sort of thing we would necessarily, you know, cover.
But like you guys do cover what's happening in broadband in the UK. And
yeah.
You know, I do think
a bigger picture sort of level.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't be shy about getting in touch about that stuff. I know you'd ultimately like to have a proper job.
I would.
But as long as you keep consulting, feel free to get in touch about that stuff.
Okay.
Worst of happiness, I'll just kind of...
Look, and that's what, you know, I'd much rather have you do that and say, Mary, come on.
Rather than give you some, yeah, that's really interesting, Mary. And you're like, Scott, I thought you thought that was really interesting. And where's the coverage? And turned out I was lying.
No, of course, this is why we're friends.
Turned out I was lying to your face.
Yeah, no, I'd much rather have you say, Mary, that's bullshit. I'm not going to write about that.
Well, that's what you always get. So before we move on from Mary stuff, I want to ask you about Mobile Congress.
Aha.
So we, funny, I was chatting to someone else on a call this week, and they listened to the podcast, and they're going, "Yeah, you and Ian, half the time you sounded like you were going to go. How come you didn't?" And I just went in there, and it looked like too much of a ball ache. I think those might have been my precise words, which in the context of the conversation might not have been the reason they were expecting. And my feeling was, looking at the sort of coverage that came out of it after, I don't know about you, Ian, I didn't feel too much FOMO.
I thought it was easier to cover from here than there, actually.
Well, that's often the case anyway.
And also, the weird thing is that a lot of the big announcements, I mean, DT's CEO, for instance, didn't go. I'm not sure Claudia Nemat, who did a big presentation, went either. It was all like from a sort of virtual...
No, I'm their sort of virtual setup. Well. Yeah.
I think AWS had a sort of virtual village.
Thanks to Daniel Royston.
Well, Daniel Royston, I mean, it's all very well to talk about the cloud, but if you've not got a virtual village, then... You know, what's the point of having a physical booth?
It shouldn't have been MWC.
That's a bit 19th century, isn't it?
It shouldn't have been MWC. It should have been DRC. Except that stands for Democratic Republic of Congo. Which could have got a bit confusing. But, you know, the Daniel Royston Congress, isn't it?
No, she did have an online thing, I think, as well, in fairness. But
anyway, so we sort of went, all right. And then the other reason not to go is, like, you know, previously, every single Mobile World Congress I've been to, I've gone out on Tuesday night and got on the lash with Mary.
Yeah.
And she's always put, and I'm sure I've spoken about it in previous pods. You only went to the first Mary dinner ever last 2019.
I did. Yeah. No, I mean, I would have gone if it was all about that, but at the time we decided not to go.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. Another reason not to go is it wasn't apparent to me that was going to happen this year.
No, I don't have a job.
You certainly can't afford
it. I'm
going to ask you, actually, afterwards, if we ever drink afterwards, I'm going to ask you what the typical bill was for Gaig.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
But what was the main thing that stopped it for us? I think it was just too much.
It was the hassle of the COVID stuff. Yeah.
It was quite difficult.
We would have gone if it was
back,
dead.
You had to quarantine still then when you got back, didn't
you? That's what it was.
That was the main reason we didn't go.
Yeah, because you had to quarantine for like 5 days.
I might even have been prepared to put up with all their obsession with wearing masks, even on the beach.
The masky stuff makes me quite tense, though.
I find that a bit of a nonsense, having to wear
actually,
it outside
I have to say,
everywhere.
That was,
not that we ever go to the beach when we're there. But
that was no big deal. Nobody was really wearing a mask anywhere.
Oh, they weren't?
Mm-mm.
So tell us now, now that we've had our wittering, give us the sort of top line. How was it?
Well, the first thing is going in June. Holy shit.
It's hot, the weather.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Nice.
Yeah.
But good hot.
Yeah.
Right.
It was fabulous.
Not if you're wearing a mask all day long.
Exactly.
Well, inside
the city couldn't accommodate this amount of people extra in June. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true. I mean, I don't know.
Because there's more tourists.
Yeah.
Yeah, they knew they were going to get.
But again, you know, it's an interesting. All right, that's a reasonable call. In a normal year, non-COVID year, it would have been more expensive. You would have had more people there.
Yeah.
But man, it was nice. It was because, you know, sometimes in February it's like, you know.
So Barcelona
was snow
nice.
One year, like yeah. 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barcelona was nice. I know you love Barcelona. I seem to remember being a social media friend of yours, pictures of the Basilica or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the show?
That's in Rome, Basilica, man, by
the way. Don't talk about the show.
What do they call
Sagrada
Familia? Sagrada Familia, sorry. I've got to find that one up.
I know what you meant.
Yeah, the Gaudi effort.
It's the Gaudi thing that never stops being built. You know, look, only halls 1, 2, and 3 were open. And
thank God, because nobody wants to go to those ones that take like 2 miles to walk to.
I've done the hall 8.
It's the fourth dimension.
That's a big improvement.
But I mean, you get to hall 3 and it was just, you know, not busy. You know?
No, even
and,
then.
Yeah, and that's where they had all the sessions were in hall 3. And they had they created a big...
So remind us, you had a specific role as well.
Thank you. The whole reason I went was because I got to MC the inaugural Diversity for Tech Summit. And so in 2016, the GSMA kicked off the Women for Tech.
Or Birds for Tech, as I call it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is perfect. I mean, it's so you, I can't stand
There's
it.
Not many women I can say that to their face.
Oh, and know that
kind of dirty look.
I freaking love it, man. Yeah, I absolutely love it. And... But because it's so you might as well just add "in it" to the end of that.
You could call it "Birds in Tech," and then you've got a great acronym to go with that. Well.
That's good.
And the brackets on the side. Anyway, we're getting into like Sid James territory here.
Anyway, I got to do that. So we started with Women in Tech years ago, and then they've evolved it to Diversity for Tech, and they asked me to come back. And so I've been this unofficial ambassador for this for years.
You have been.
And,
actually, you know, fair play to you, because I've normally gone.
You've gone. I mean,
I've got to admit, in part because we're mates. I mean, you know, I'll take the piss out of what I view, and you and I have an ongoing, fairly robust debate about you know, whatever we call it, active discrimination or positive action or whatever. All the euphemisms are gone. and to be honest, I don't come down too hard on it, but I'm more sceptical about it than you. But then I'm a bloke, so maybe I would be.
Yeah.
I've always admired the fact that, because they normally give you this shitty slot, to be fair.
I know, yeah.
And I've gone there normally on a Thursday, like last year. No, not last year, obviously.
2019,
I had a 2 5 a.m. finishes in a row. One after your thing.
Yep, on Tuesday
and then,
night.
And then one after the Glaciard thing.
Glaciard.
Mm-hmm. Both of which I was egged on by our mutual friend Richard Fogg.
Well, it's always, you know, normally it's all my fault, but in that case, that was Foggy, definitely Rich's fault.
That was me and Foggy being sort of enablers to each other. and then I'm sort of staggering in there on Thursday, no sleep, still pissed. I've been listening to Pink Floyd's The Wall and openly crying walking
in.
You were
weepy.
I was just broken. In hindsight,
where
I should have listened. Exactly. Well, there's so much of The Wall. The Wall can kick you off even if you're on top form.
I don't know if I've seen it. There's some pretty depressing stuff on the album, though.
Yeah,
it is.
It was a bad choice. I should have gone for Metallica or something. Yeah. But yeah, then I get in there and sort of sit down. Normally there's an exclusion zone because I'm giving off tramp vibes. But yeah, I get to see you up there on stage doing your thing. And, you know, I think one year, I don't think it was 2019, maybe it was 2018, I did an interview with you and wrote up the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just tried
that
to...
That was 2018, yeah.
And tried to give some balance to it because, of course, you know, we do know... And we remember 2017, I, together with Ian from Babel, tried to make a joke about the... the sexual imbalance in telecoms, and that backfired a little bit.
Yeah, you got beaten
which
for
I call,
that.
Which I call sexism gate to this day.
Mm-hmm.
But it is obvious when you walk around Mobile World Congress that it's mainly blokes.
Yeah, this is why I wear bright red or orange, you know, bright colored dresses, because the sea of men in dark suits and dark clothing is just everywhere. And so it's just like, yeah. I'm gonna, you know, we're gonna emphasize this point, you know.
You know, and the stuff I love about the stuff I particularly like about what you talk about is the sort of mentorship and encouragement, and all that sort of thing. I think that's really hard to disagree with. Where I might disagree a little bit is the more sort of overt, like quotas and that sort of thing. And I don't even know if that's a thing that you're into, but I'm basically, that's a long way of saying good for you. I still think, for all my reservations, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, and I'm happy that they have moved on to actual diversity, right? I mean, it's so we were able to cover with this one woman on who was in charge of a company that's called the Valuable 500, and I hope I remember these stats right. There are I'm not going to get this right. 2.1 billion people with disabilities, which is, by the way, the way you're supposed to say that. That's the I asked her specifically. I said, "You got to school me. How do I, you know, provide some sort of nomenclature for this?"
Holy
so, shit. Right?
Is 2.1. Is that physical and mental? Or,
I didn't qualify. I didn't look
it
for.
Has to be,
I'm assuming it's. I no cognitive disability is apparently a slightly different categorization, but I it's not. I'm not sure if that 2.1. is inclusive of that or not, but who cares? We're still talking about a gigantic potential population for employment that essentially gets
25%.
Almost like nothing. Yeah. So that blew my mind. I may have that wrong. I may have gone a little dyslexic on that as well. It might be 1.2 or it's 2.1, but whatever the hell it is, it's still a goddamn lot of people.
Yeah.
But I started every session with you know, my 18-year-old son, who is just wonderful, is gay, and he's helped me understand, you know, how to talk about a lot of this, right? And to be mindful about how I speak about this. Thank God for him, because, you know, if I didn't, I'd screw this up endlessly. So I started up on every conversation with,
I feel your pain, Mary.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you know, and I'm like, okay, so I want to admit my privilege, because that's something else, too, which I think is totally cool over the last, like, year, the conversations you have about privilege. And I said, look, I want to just get my privilege right out on the table now. I'm a white, straight, and at times I mentioned American, cis, which means I was the gender I was identified with at birth is female. Mm-hmm. So cis female that's able-bodied. I said, so the only thing I've really got that's been a negative for me is a female.
Yeah. In terms of the hierarchy, you're one less privileged than me.
Right.
I looked at the number. I think it's more like 1.2.
See, I'm dyslexic. Yeah.
Still a lot.
Yeah, still a lot, yeah. Right? Exactly. So thank you for doing that. Mm. I mean, I really think this is... It was a fascinating thing, and we had some wonderful speakers that really did get into all of the different areas and the how some companies are paying super attention to it and how others are just trying to figure out how to do it. And it was really well attended, well, even for the show that was not that well attended.
Oh, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, we had...
That's the one thing I'll say.
We had really
before
good,
I move
really
on, unless you've got anything to add, Ian, is... I hope in future GSMA promotes your stuff further up the order if you do it again.
Yeah.
Because
we had a great slide
where I get jaded is where I think it's sort of tokenistic and it's sort of box ticking and it's all this CSR. It's like,
well, it's the virtue signaling that pisses you off every single time.
Yeah. It gets rammed into the noise.
That would be my comment on it, you know, is slight skepticism about how seriously they take it. And even when they did their... I mean, Scott and I both covered the sort of press release that they did, press conference they did in the run-up to the show. You remember when they had John Hoffman and Matt Granwood?
It was either at that, actually,
or at the one of the sessions early on when Matt Granwood just did this massive virtue signaling presentation, which had all sorts of expressions in, like net zero and, you know, how wonderful telecom is because we help companies do this and we're not... And, you know, you go through it and deconstruct it afterwards, and actually a lot of it doesn't really stack up, to be honest with you.
Just noise.
I have a little bit of sympathy. The only thing I'll tell you about that, right, is that in the end, the association is a trade association, right? And they have to say all that shit. They would be irresponsible for not taking a position. They wouldn't be serving their members if they were being silent about it. I understand your skepticism. I totally get it. And are they doing it as window dressing? But they're actually saying the same thing that their members are saying as well. Now, are they virtue signaling?
Yeah.
You know, are the operators themselves? And you're going to find varying levels of, you know, reality in every one of those, right?
Well, the cutoff point for me between virtue signaling and something more profound is what you do on top of the PR stuff.
That's right. The actual actions you take.
So I totally get your point about GSMA. They can't not nod to it.
They can't not do it. That's right.
They can't not incorporate it into their external messaging. But that's what I mean about them moving your thing up further.
And it was Tuesday, and we had wonderful coverage. And that made me – and that had been something that – you know, I think all of them, you know, John, Matt's, everyone had been really sensitive to. The only reason we had ever really been on Thursday in some respects had been simply because, you know, you had the ministerial program and this was such a great place to put us after that. But ministerial lasted until Wednesday, so we couldn't get in until Thursday. Now, the way they constructed the show this year and the way they did these different studios, they called them, were pretty cool. And so if they can, you know, mimic that sort of structure, I think we've got a better shot at being slightly in more in line with the regular tracks is my point.
Yeah.
The final thought I'll say about what you just said about the slot is they could have always put you instead of someone who's paying them shitload of fucking money, couldn't they? So just put your money where your mouth is if you're going to virtue signal. That's all I've got to say.
I just had a sip of beer in agreement.
There we go. Okay, we better move it on. The other two things we want to talk about is, roaming. And I'm gonna hand it over to you, Ian, because I've been banging on a fair bit. Mary's been banging on a fair bit.
I've been banging on a fair bit.
It was Three. What did Three announce this week?
Yeah, well, they've sort of followed the two other operators that have already reintroduced. So roaming fees, obviously the fees you pay when you're a mobile customer, when you go to another country.
The sort of premium.
Yeah, you pay an extra... Well, you used to pay an extra charge to go to Europe.
And sometimes you get some real bill shock, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's coming back, the bill shock.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. I mean, the stuff that's been announced so far, it's all, it, you know, you look at it, it's not that bad, the fees that they're starting to talk about. The point is that they, all the operators said, you know, after we left Europe, after we left the European Union, and we're suddenly outside these rules that the EU introduced to not allow operators to charge for roaming, you know, everybody was saying, oh, there's a potential for roaming fees to come back, isn't there? And BT, Vodafone, Three and O2, the four mobile network operators in the UK, also, we don't have any plans to do that at the moment. BT and Vodafone have already now sort of gone back on that. The most strident one of the lot on that was Three. I mean, they actually
back
said
in the
we,
day.
I mean, for a start, they dropped roaming fees actually when roaming fees were still in place. You know, I think they eventually got phased out completely in 2017.
Yeah, the big thing that they did was to be ahead of the market.
Yeah. And they were very, very outspoken about not, you know, they weren't just saying we have no plans at the moment, which you look at and you think, oh, okay. They were saying we will not bring back roaming. And they've now gone and sort of followed BT and Vodafone. So I think from October, if you're a new customer, but obviously then if you're re-signing a contract, then you become a new customer essentially. So it's going to apply to everybody eventually.
Yeah.
You're paying in the EU, the charges internationally are different, but if you're going in the EU, it's I think
two quid a day,
which is similar to what BT and Vodafone
said. Exactly. Thank you, Scott.
And I just think it's...
Why is it all me? What have I done?
It's Brexit, isn't it?
Oh, it's Brexit. It's like it me is. For being a...
thanks, Brexit.
It's because me
thanks
for being
Obama.
A racist Brexit bastard.
I mean, we could talk about the mechanics of it, but I just think from a marketing perspective, it's a bad thing for Three to have done, I think, because... You know, they're the challenger brand in the market, in the UK market. They've kind of positioned themselves as being a bit different. You know, they're not just going to go along with what the other big operators do. They've got a low-cost reputation. They have to try and find ways of differentiating themselves.
Yeah.
This is what they'd always done before when they went against
them. This is their
USP. Now, if they're going to drop that and just start to sort of align themselves on marketing and pricing with the big two, then they've got to have something else that makes them stand out. They don't have a fixed line network. They've got no TV proposition. They're behind on 5G rollout.
I've got the answer. Change your name to Five. Sorry, Pierre.
So
I
just think
something?
It's, to me, it's just quite a negative step forward.
Yeah,
them.
I think it is. No, marketing-wise, it certainly is.
I agree with Ian. And so I've always put up with a shitty coverage, let's say. It's spotty, even in London.
Not spots, as they say.
Even with 5G, it helped a bit, actually, since I got a 5G phone. It, like, plugged a lot
really?
Of holes. Yeah, yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah, but so, and it's low cost, okay, yeah. But now I was like, okay, so I'm paying low, fine. Shitty coverage, not cool. And now now roaming.
Exactly.
So I'm like,
yeah.
What if I just, I might as well.
You know, and all their efforts to try and, you know, I mean, they were the operator that years ago, when they first introduced their brand, they were very big on trying to not be a telco and trying to be a sort of more into content and more into services. And they talked about this a lot, and they've never really, I mean, they're still just a low cost dumb pipe, let's be honest. So the only things that they, you know, their ways of really standing out, I think, were on tariffs, good customer service, you know, not just going along with the pack. If they just start to do what the big companies do, then they've got to find something else that really makes them stand out.
As I said
out,
in my write-up, they've basically, whether or not they choose to take it remains to be seen, but they basically handed that territory over to O2, which is the only one.
O2 is the only holder.
Not
at the moment,
to not say it. Yeah. They probably will.
Yeah,
in fact, I'm gonna say two things. Firstly, I'm gonna ask Mary in a sec about whether she feels they had any choice in making this move, because it feels voluntary. It certainly. My understanding is that the wholesale rates haven't changed yet. And to be fair, we must point out they're not actually implementing these charges until middle of next year. But
sorry, I've got a quick technical question. Yeah. Those £2 a day, do you actually have to do something? Or what if you don't do anything? Do they charge you
crazy
rates?
I'm not sure.
Or do you have to actively say,
I think if you don't do anything, you're
going to
get charged £2.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I mean, what? I think it's BT, in fairness to, because I said BT and Vodafone are almost the same. I haven't looked into Vodafone stuff, but BT, I think you can actually avoid paying £2 by signing up to a special offer.
No, it's Vodafone that did that. Vodafone's got £1 if you book 8 days or 15 days.
Yeah, well,
days.
BT's got the same thing, because I got ticked off for writing that this is what happens, and then I got told by the PR
Fair
people,
enough.
Actually, if you do well, get inside a special deal before you go, it's
I mean,
not £2
it'll be really
a day.
Sneaky if it's like...
Because £2 a day for a two-week holiday is quite a big addition to your monthly bill. You go away for August and come back in your mobile
not
bill.
$10
a day.
Not as much as a fucking PCR test, though, isn't it? Anyway, that's another matter.
It's £14. Yeah, it's not, yeah.
My
point is that
anyway,
it's really
thing,
sneaky if you like actually have to do something.
The other thing I'm going to do is hand over the ball to you guys because I've got to get the bug.
Oh my God.
And this is going to be interesting. I think I'm going to go around Ian's way. Ian's way and give give Mary an opportunity. Are you getting a call?
No, I'm just ignoring.
If you want to go to Lou, I can. I wanted to ask Mary because you obviously know roaming. You know, you worked for Cineverse years ago, which is the roaming company. I mean, one of the things that maybe unfairly I wrote in my coverage today, which I don't even know if it's actually up on the site yet, although it will be on Monday, was a lot of these big European, BT not so much, but Vodafone and Three and Telefonica have operations in other European markets. Mm-hmm. You know, and now if you're from a consumer perspective, you're going to think, well, hang on a minute. I mean, if you're a consumer who's slightly in the know about business and affiliates, you're going to think, well, I'm going to go to Italy on holiday. Hang on a minute. Three's got a network there. You know, I'm going to roam onto their network. Why should I get charged more when, when the charge that Three Italy applies is basically just money sloshing around different bits of the same group. But it doesn't get, you were saying earlier, it doesn't really get managed that way, does it?
No.
Which is where companies like Cineverse come in, I guess.
Well, no, I mean, not even really. I mean, just to the extent that each one of these, to use the Vodafone nomenclature, each one of these opcos, right, that operates in each one of these locations, first of all, you have to understand, are they fully owned?
Yep.
Right. So that's sort of the first, bit. Right. So Telefonica fully owns O2, I think, here in the U.S. or in the U.K. Yeah.
So, well, they used to. That's now a joint venture between Liberty and
that's
Telefonica.
Right, it's Liberty,
Virgin
that's
Media
right.
O2 is the new name of it.
That's right. So
that's changed a bit, actually.
So that will have potentially changed its dynamic with how it would have reacted with other Telefonica properties in the rest of the world. So I'm just going to use them as an example, and I can also talk about Vodafone. But this applies pretty much to all of them. Each one of them is obligated to manage their own OpCo finances.
Yep.
Now, what there will be is transfer taxes that exist that are identified inside of each one of the countries that they're in. But as soon as the UK came out of the EU, they were no longer subject to the super defined. Now, you got to remember, we go all the way back to 2007 were the first wholesale defined prices that were applicable to any EU country that said, okay, you can't charge at a wholesale level anything more than this price.
This is on voice, wasn't it?
It was voice, SMS, and data. Okay. I mean, it was everything got defined.
Yep.
And then we had these step downs. Plans.
Yeah, they were just chipping away at it for years.
Chipping away at it for years, right? And then in 2013, we had the fabulous vote that said, okay, F this. We're going to no roaming. Intra-EU. I remember being in the Madrid airport when this happened thinking, okay, well, that's it. Fucking roaming's gone. I was at Cineverse at the time. I had just gone to see Telefonica at the headquarters in Madrid, and I was with the wonderful Patricia Mayor, who was the salesperson at the time, and I remember just thinking, this is it.
But that's obviously a worse thing for Cineverse, a company that just makes money.
No, because
from
at that point,
at
you have to understand, as we got just about 2010, 2011, nobody was getting paid on the vendor side at a per record basis. Per transaction stuff started to simply go away.
Right.
So that means it didn't really matter whether we were, whatever the rate was or whatever the case was, we were going more and more towards a fixed monthly cost because the operators were unwilling to have a variable cost because they just simply had the margin pulled out from underneath them. Think about this, right? So if all of a sudden I have regulated rates at a wholesale amount, I have regulated rates for retail, right? I'm no longer going to be beholden to a vendor that's just simply going to continue to charge me the more traffic I carry. So I got to fix this immediately. So, no, Cineverse, we
so
just...
So it's already been adapting since 2007.
Yeah, we have been adapting, reluctantly, on the billing and clearing side from, a long time.
Yeah.
But I want to jump to now. Roaming has been absolutely obliterated because of COVID, right? I mean, the roaming organizations now, if there's one person in them, I mean, seriously, it's...
So this is companies like Cineverse, companies that are...
No, I'm talking about the operators.
The operators, okay, yeah.
The operator departments. I mean, Vodafone, you go to, VRS and all these companies that used to have hundreds of people.
Yeah.
COVID has annihilated this.
But would this apply to people like Bix as well?
And, to some degree, yeah. But we will have, you know, most of those companies, including
Cimbers, I mean, I know they were adapting anyway.
We've been adapting into, for years for this. So don't, the vendor side is not as impacted because we've already been in a squeeze.
So it's roaming as a source of cash within
for
operators.
For the operators. This is the key. So you have to keep in mind, as soon as all of the operators here in the UK were no longer under the obligations of those rates, everybody in that 27 other countries could look at these guys and say, okay, let's raise some rates.
But aren't there some, surely there's some operators, this is the thing I don't quite get. It's money moving around between different companies.
No, and I know
aren't there some that do better out of it? For some operators, surely roaming is quite a big cost. And for some, it's probably.
That's right. The balance of traffic ends up becoming an interesting thing. But we're not really talking about a circumstance where any operator is changing that many subs on an annual basis, right? So what's the churn here? What, 1.2, 1.5, right? So it's not as if all of a sudden overnight Vodafone UK has, you know, 500,000 new subs, you know, or so it's not as if your balance of traffic is not really changing all that much. So the paradigms of balance of traffic between, say, a Vodafone Italy and a Vodafone UK, that's probably been the same inbound and outbound for a decade.
Yeah.
Right? So now Vodafone Italy can look at Vodafone UK and say, yeah, okay, we're gonna do this. Now VRS is sitting in the middle, Vodafone Roaming Service is sitting in the middle for Vodafone, and they're trying to figure out how do we arbitrage this appropriately for at least our intra-branded network roaming. And then we have to figure out, okay, am I gonna make that a big deal? Am I going to steer to that? Think about steering. You still have the steering activity. I could be a Vodafone UK customer going to Italy, and all of a sudden I'm getting a better potential rate than my Vodafone Italy does. So I'm going to steer to whoever that is. But what I really want you to understand is that...
And that's just because, as you said, the opcos just manage it without thinking, oh, we're part of
the
same
group. Well, I mean, they're constantly balancing this, right? Yeah. You know, the ownership structure, again, always comes back to that.
Yep.
What's the ownership structure? How is that going to be managed? So O2, I think, is a really good example. They could have their rates right now being jacked up by everybody in the EU simply because they can, because they don't no longer have this sheet of rates that they're obligated to abide by at the wholesale level.
Yep.
Retail has completely disappeared, right? But now retail, O2 has the opportunity to do that.
Have we discussed whether or not we think this is imminent, this hiking up of the
wholesale roaming. Well, it's important to keep in mind, I mean, the way roaming works, right, is there are cycles throughout a year that are driven mostly by seasonal travel behavior that drives when roaming rates change. And what that means at a wholesale level is I sign a discount agreement for you because it's coming up to the Christmas holidays. And typically I am DT. And my Berlin Christmas markets jack up, you know, roaming from the UK. And so therefore, I'm going to, you know, see what I can get out of O2.
But this is an odd situation though. Now, it's not like before, because before it was all countries going within Europe. This
that's
is
right.
just the UK.
Yeah.
The rest of Europe, there's no change in wholesale
so all that's
rates
happened
between
is
France
they,
and Germany.
So now
it's just how they approach the UK, basically.
But if you put it another way, now you're just adding the UK to the list of the rest of the world.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's important to keep in mind. Yeah. Right. It's not as if, you know, you're unique anymore. It's just
and
like
geographical proximity probably isn't that relevant, is it?
It's important related to traffic patterns.
Okay.
You have a much greater opportunity for travel between here.
Oh yeah.
Crossing borders that.
But in terms of like sort of billing and commercial considerations, it could be UK or it could be Tunisia. I mean, it's
from a home operator's point of view. As I'm sitting there thinking, what am I going to charge people to serve? You know, you're looking at what is my typical traffic pattern? Who's it typically from? What are the seasonal? Right. You know, so all the UK has been, you know, it's just added to the list of everybody else.
Yeah, but you know what I find quite sad about this is, you know, when roaming did eventually get sort of phased out entirely in 2017, there was quite an explosion in data usage on smartphones overseas.
Yeah.
I mean, people, I remember even, you used to go to Europe in 2016 on business trips and sort of print out city maps of where you needed to go to.
Because you didn't want to do Google Maps.
And you know, all sorts of things that you do. You were like taking phone numbers down.
I remember some mobile congress bill shock. going yeah, back even like so less than 10 years ago, people come back from Barcelona going, what the fuck?
And then all of a sudden everybody's using their phones, and you think operators should have been able to find a way of monetizing this somehow.
I don't disagree, but the one thing that I will tell you in terms of the bill shock thing is you guys have been talking about the rates that Three is going to implement, right? These are all per day rates.
Yeah, they're not bad.
No, but I mean...
Compared to before.
Yeah.
Not great, not terrible.
No, they're not bad, I mean, compared to before, which is
you
fine.
You can be butthurt about the fact that you're going to be charged for it.
I am
get
butthurt.
That.
If you're a regular business, like say you're Pierre, and he's going...
Yeah, you can tell that he's not sitting comfortable.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he's butthurt, because let's say he's going... I mean, he was doing a huge amount of travel before COVID. Every month he's away.
Yeah.
You know, you imagine what that is. If you're away for 2 weeks, an extra 28 quid on your bill... You know, you add that up over a year.
Even if you've got the ball ache of trying to expense
it. He's away from home that much, and I know he was away from home that much before COVID, so if he was to do the same thing again, he'd have any... Yeah, all right, I know it's a company fee, but it's
but
still
the,
a huge amount
But the point,
of,
I don't disagree, but what is so important to keep in mind is that, you know, I remember when it was 20 bucks...
For a day.
One
like a megabyte or something.
Kilobyte.
Yeah, kilobyte.
Yeah. No. What do you get with 1 kilobyte?
Well, it's just going back some.
Yeah, got to keep in mind, I've been
three
doing
words.
This since 95, yeah. Okay? So, like, I mean, let's be clear. I'm almost at 30 years in this shit.
It's
so, I mean,
disc.
But that's what's important is that, you know, we have evolved. No matter what, the billing systems have gotten a little bit better. We're in a position to actually charge for that. It used to be that you couldn't actually turn off the ability to take that usage and turn it into billable usage.
Mm.
Right? Well, so now, I mean, it's important that at least... You know, if we're going to revert, at least it's not reverting back to the dark ages.
Well, for
right?
now,
yeah, it's, yeah. You know.
For now, I mean, I have a couple of concerns. One, to your point, that it's a bit thinner than the wedge. They're just sort of seeding the market, and they go, yeah, I know we said it's 2 quid, but it turns out it's a bit more pricey than we thought, so now it's 5 or it's 10 or we're going to start metering
it's
it.
Too, it's
too
up to like a gig.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
Well, then the
fair use cap is another thing. But then fair use is a really abused term. Anyway, but the other one, and again, I'm not sure because I had to go off and answer the call of nature, whether you address this, is whether we think in the case of three, by May next year, that the wholesale rates will have gone up. And I think you reckon it's inevitable they will have.
Yeah, because they're going into... the pile of everybody else in the rest of the world. So yes, all of a sudden, all the UK operators.
So they're just getting ahead of the game.
Yeah, but here's the thing: what's happening with those international rates for the rest of the world? You know, you talked about bill shock.
Are they going down?
Because we all forget about bill shock because we were in the EU for ages and they just scrapped roaming. But is bill shock still a thing? If you go to the north of Africa or if you go to the US, and I don't really do trips like that very much, and when I have done, I can't remember what's happened on the mobile phone side, but do people still go to Chicago for a week and come back and have like £1,000 bills like you read about in the Guardian newspaper? And because
no,
that's right, what you get for reading the
so
Guardian,
those wholesale rates, if they're going to be aligned with what's going on in the rest of the world, yeah, they're going to go up, but they're not going to be
no
it's not
right.
like they're going to be
because
horrendous, is it?
That's right, because in the end we've had a fabulous
run.
Inconceivable, just falling knives from the sky.
You're talking
you can't
about like
catch
the
them.
Perfect storm of the last year.
Yeah, no, it's the perfect storm of the last 10 years.
Oh, okay.
I could go off on this. We've done a fabulous job in the this is important to keep in mind, in developed nations where you have good smartphone penetration and good postpaid. All right? In those markets, we have destroyed value perception of mobile in the fight to obtain subscribers across back and forth. And we have used every lever possible to do that.
And gigabytes are devalued, aren't they? I mean, you talked about a kilobyte being
everything.
£10
yeah.
or whatever.
Are you referring to sort of commoditization and basically,
totally.
Basically
yeah.
sort of feeding the dumb pipe perception?
Well, I don't really give a shit about the dumb pipe.
I mean, what do you get?
To you as a consumer.
What do you get, Scott, per month on gigabytes?
Oh, I get a shitload.
Well, but that ties into this, doesn't it?
That's
because,
right.
Because people are used to getting 60 gigabytes. If you go to Europe and they say, we're going to charge you in roaming, like Mary was just saying, at some ridiculous fee for using 1 megabyte, let's
right.
say, it
right.
just doesn't
so
stack
you're
up.
Saying the industry being too loose, that's given too much away too cheaply?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's crushing. I mean, I know that we in developed nations hit penetration of addressable market, people that could buy the device and buy the subscription. You know, we did that right around 2010. You know, 2011, we hit, the majority got through. So we're at about 80, 85% across developed nations in terms of those two stats, right, of postpaid and smartphone. And when you go and you think about, well, what have we done with that? All we've done is just have this race to the bottom for every goddamn fee that, you know, we could have charged for, that devalues and completely minimizes the extraordinary value that we get by holding that damn thing in our hand all day.
Mm.
And, you know, this is one of my biggest frustrations. Well,
we have to talk about it on the pod, presumably previous pods with you, but certainly other ones, just the inability of the operator world and the vendor ecosystem around it to properly cash in on this, and the amount of ground they've ceded to the, what we used to call the OTTs. I'm actually pleased that that term's kind of faded away.
Oh, the over-the-tops, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Because it was too it was too navel-gazing.
Yeah.
And it was, but the internet giants.
It was reductive.
In a more generic term. But the amount of ground they ceded, which is going to feed in, which I'm going to move it along a sec, but when we say your bit, Ian, because
ceded ground, but I would say that, you know, I don't want to go along with the operator argument entirely that, oh, we've been so hard done by and people have been nasty to us on the government side for years and years and years. But yeah, to some extent, they are heavily regulated,
much
treated
more
like
than
utilities
the internet giants,
in very
certainly.
Competitive markets, unable to push mergers through, certainly in Europe. You know,
it's ridiculous.
There is something to that whole
debate.
And you're right.
There really is.
And then you add on top of that the insult of injury to how much the spectrum costs.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Facebook's allowed to go and buy Instagram
do whatever
and WhatsApp
the hell they
for
want
$19
billion.
And no one goes, oh, this sounds a bit weird.
Yeah, but, no, I agree
with
you.
And then years later,
said, okay, you're getting access to public spectrum, so therefore you have this super burdensome activity. And by the way, we're not going
to
let you consolidate.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, deal with that. So no, I agree with you. I'm equally frustrated in both camps, which kind of makes me feel a little bit better about the developing nations because, frankly, they're prepaid. And they're still charging people for per message, local text messaging.
And, of course, behavior is completely different accordingly.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have more voice, you have more text messaging, you have less data.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting, because of the work I'm doing with Link, I'm getting more exposure to, you know, developing nation and some of that behavior pattern. And you're seeing more value retained by the operators for what they're selling.
Yeah.
You know, and the rates for the purchase of the spectrum is not as high. I mean, I think you're completely right. You know, it's this, I'm saddened by the lack of foresight and understanding what this technology could truly do. And yet, you know, we have hamstrung it. And then also the behavior has just reinforced that behavior.
Well, that
it's frustrating.
That kind of lends itself into a segue I'm going to impose on us.
Okay.
In the name of time. A sort of intermediary point is regulation. So we know how heavily regulated telecoms are. And God, I mean, it must be 10 to 25% of stories that go on telecoms.com have some regulatory angle on them because it's so relevant. And then, as you say, Facebook's allowed to go off and buy Instagram and shit and WhatsApp. And WhatsApp, which is basically a communication service.
Yeah, you guys talked about this last week.
Yeah, but because it's an over-the-top communication service, it didn't fall under the purview of all that.
And well, they just didn't understand what they were doing.
Well, exactly. In hindsight, it should
have. The regulator did not understand.
No, they didn't get it.
That's what that was about, yeah.
And so now we've got this week, which isn't, you know, this is only semi-relevant to that. But we've got this week a couple of internet giants launching some hardware products. Now, they're welcome to do so. So the first one, is Amazon launching this thing called a Fire TV or something like that?
Not just a Fire Stick.
Well, yeah, they always had the Fire.
Yeah, well, this is an actual telly.
I don't understand why they would do that.
Well, quite. Well, this is what we're about to chat about, isn't it?
Well, there's mine.
Just patience. Come on.
It was like Apple is releasing a TV, but they already have the device.
Not now, Kato.
The actual screen itself. Sorry, no.
It's just taking the Kindle and blowing it up bigger. That's all.
Yeah. Yes, big fucking Kindle. You just get to read big books. It's for the Bible and War and Peace.
Scrolls.
But actually, I mean, you're right, Pierre. There's not a lot of point to it because I remember when I just started this job 7 years ago, for God's sake.
Baby.
Wow, you've been here a long time. Sort of,
I know. And I'd come off, my previous job was smartphone analyst at Strategy Analytics. And one of the first stories that came out in 2014 when I started was Amazon launching a phone called a Fire phone or whatever. And I had a little look at it, and it was, at the time, it cost about the same as a entry-level iPhone. Mm. And it was an Amazon phone. It didn't even have proper Android because they'd had to fork the Android to put all this Amazon special self-interested shit on it. So you, just like you've got, just like we just happened more recently with Huawei, with Android, because Android's open source, but you've got to sign up to Google's special scenario to have the Play Store and all the Google mobile products like Gmail and Maps and
YouTube
and all that jazz. So it was defeatured. It was the price of a premium phone, and all it had was some Amazon shit on it. And I was just like, who the fuck's going to want to buy this? And then lo and behold...
Nobody.
Lo and behold, everyone at Amazon HQ has now got one of those as a goddamn paperweight. Mm. But, you know, while I was slagging them off... And they've launched these tablets. I don't think anyone's got their tablets either. But but obviously they're not complete...
Were they Kindles?
No,
tablets.
Yeah, Kindle's not really a tablet.
Yeah, Kindle's an e-reader.
They launched a tablet?
Yeah, well, quite. I rest my case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, like an actual iPad rival.
Clearly. I presume, my lord, it was a shit effort.
Oh, the Kindle Fire.
Yeah, there we go. So, okay. But then on the flip side, Kindle is obviously the default e-reader for the world. Yeah. And I keep saying this every time I slag off Amazon. Thank you for publishing my book. And they've also, what was the other device? Oh, yeah, the Alexa, the smart speakers. Mm. They're the market leader on smart speakers, and they were the first to market. And so I'd say their record's mixed. Hmm. But anything that's got Fire next to it sucks so far. And this telly's got Fire next to it. But what it basically is...
Go on. The
Fire sticks are right.
The Fire TV... Well, there's a stick, but there's also the bigger one, which is the Apple TV rival. That's decent. Yeah.
Well, like the set-top box?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're going to strap this to a...
That's more or less what it is. But actually, that's not the big thing, because the Fire sticks, I think, perform a lot of the function of the set-top box. In other words... You can just give your smart TV a hell of a lot of functionality just by lobbing this USB dongle in.
There's no voice control with this stick.
No, well, there we are. Yeah.
Well, so, it doesn't even need to be a smart TV, does it?
The stick is not 4K. Port at the back. Yeah, there's a few things.
Although
you can't buy a TV now that's not a smart TV.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
And that hasn't got a USB port in it.
Which has kind of killed the market for Fire Sticks.
Yeah.
You could just get
making a TV.
Well, no, it doesn't, because there's still some unique functionality that comes from Fire Sticks in terms of the Amazon stuff.
Well, that you can't get from just downloading the app on your smart TV.
I don't know. I don't own a smart TV. I was assuming as much.
You need to buy a smart TV.
You don't own a smart TV?
I've got a smart TV. I haven't got a Fire Stick.
No, I've got both.
All you need is an HDMI TV. And if you have Apple TV or...
Fair enough.
That'll make it smart.
I faffed around with a Fire Stick because my mum didn't have a smart TV but had a TV with a USB port at the back, which you plugged in, and it turns it into a sort of mini smart TV.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really... I couldn't see
it
doing anything.
But it's no good for a proper up-to-date TV.
But if you've got an up-to-date smart TV, as Mary says, that's pretty much all you can get anyway.
The Fire Stick is like the Chromecast, where you need the phone to like...
Yeah, so it's not as good as a smart TV.
No, but Amazon also has the Cube thing that comes with a remote, and it's...
And what is that?
Yeah, I have a zillion of those.
It's like the Apple TV.
I bought every one of those generations. So it's a device that allows you to... Yeah, it's a Cube, and it has a remote. And I've literally bought every generation that's existed. Hmm. It started in the beginning where you actually had downloadable content that was stored locally on that. Then they moved exclusively to streaming. So before smart TVs, so go back 7-8 years, right? I had this, and I could then plug it in, log it into my Wi-Fi network, and I would have all the I'm like Pierre. I'm an iTunes freak. Yeah. Okay, I've been on this shit since 2001. I have over 600 movies downloaded and owned.
Yeah. Oh my God. There's no way you're ever going anywhere.
I have like 7,000 songs that I bought. I mean,
how many of them are Star Wars?
But other than
how many
storage.
Exist, you know? So, I mean, but the point that this gave me in the beginning before a smart TV was that I could then start obtaining data from iTunes that I could then stream to my TV. But then you add the streaming platforms that came in later.
Yeah.
And so I could get the streaming platforms either through my Apple TV, so Disney Plus, Amazon, whatever the case may be,
Netflix, yeah.
or I could go directly to my TV.
Yeah.
Right. So I had two places now to go to get access. And all the differences really between the two is where have I already signed in?
Yeah.
Right. So basically, yeah. if you've got a smart TV now, it's
sort of, need my
it sort
Apple
of
TV.
Obviates the
yeah.
need for a box.
So, yeah.
Or a,
but
or
I
a
still
Kindle
can,
Fire Stick.
That's right. And so the device is useless. So I bought a TV for my son to take to college, who's just he's just started. And I can download Apple TV to that. I can download all of the everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you go to the you know yeah. apps and just you know whatever you want to download.
But that's the thing. Look, I have a Samsung smart TV.
Yeah.
But I also have an Apple TV. And honestly,
yeah, me too. I have the same
I
exact setup.
I just prefer
setup.
The interface on Apple TV. It's just
because you've
nicer.
Logged in all of that shit.
No, I'm logged in both. It's just like my Samsung TV is like 5 years old, so it's just more snappy.
It's a bit of a clunky interface. Yeah.
But that's their only, you know, I mean, I think Kindle Fire Sticks must have bombed the sales, I'm guessing, since
well,
the
they've just launched, along with this telly, they've launched some new Fire Sticks. So there must be something in it for them.
But I mean,
well,
they must have been like, oh, they must have found out like a new display technology then.
They're just selling it to an audience of people like my mum who hasn't upgraded to
maybe.
A smart TV,
so
presumably.
The, so the thing about... There's two things I want to say, just to finish off what this launch is. Basically, the only differentiator about this telly is Alexa.
Alexa.
The smart.
Turn on something nice.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't do it like
Which
you do
everybody
that.
Hates
the Cube,
anyway.
The Cube thing also has Alexa. The Amazon Fire Cube, whatever they call it, that also has Alexa.
Okay, so you could just get this Cube.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even need
this. Right, so that's the USP of the Cube, it's got Alexa.
Come on, do it.
You can
what do you
Alexa
say?
Play.
What do you say to Alexa?
But nobody likes Alexa, nobody wants that anyway.
Alexa,
really?
Make me happy.
You want that nasty little thing in your home, like spying on you and
oh, yeah. My son walks in the door. If he sees it plugged in, he unplugs it.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Good on him.
Yeah. I plug it in literally I have one that's enabled, right? So I have Sonos.
Yeah.
And I love that technology. It's fantastic. I can have the speakers all through my house. Yeah. It's fabulous. But I have one enabled with Alexa. So I like it when I want to be able to listen to something and I'm chopping vegetables and I'm prepping for dinner
like
and I can say, Alexa, play. Yeah. Yes, play telecoms.com podcast. I want to listen to Scott and Ian and Pierre talk while I'm chopping my onions. So when I'm crying.
Have you done
know,
that?
It looks more like than onions.
Oh, yeah.
That's good to know.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm often
Alexa,
so
you can hear yourself.
Alexa, put on some Muppets and that's always us.
Yeah. But I that's the only time. But otherwise, I unplug that particular one.
Yeah.
You know, so no,
I've just stopped you. We had a little sort of Echo Dot. Thing
yeah, yeah.
That was
oh,
into
I
just stopped using
I'm
it.
Too, I'm too gotten, fucking twitchy and paranoid. For
I've
it.
Gotten given them. I have it in like yeah. a cabinet.
Yeah, 25 I've, bucks. They're so cheap.
I have like three yeah. or four. I've got a couple.
I put them in a lead-lined box and bury them at the end of my garden.
I'm amazed you didn't put them on fire.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a good point.
Pun intended.
Note to self. So I did have one bit of fun, which, funnily enough, my dad, he's never commented on any of my stories. It's
how we
half,
doing?
Half three.
Are we okay? Okay.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up soonish. I just went one paragraph of my write-up. So it's basically all about like, the only thing that's novel about this is Alexa's built-in. So you don't have to use a remote control. You can just go, and it goes, all right, I'll put on The Real Housewives or something.
No, you're going to put on Star Wars, the new
well, yeah, well maybe. I mean, if I had any faith in the AI, I don't think the AI is even good enough to put on Star Wars as default for you, Mary. And you don't have to be the most sophisticated fucking AI in the world to know that Star Wars is a core interest of
it's
yours.
That's true. Did you watch The Bad Batch? You don't do any of the...
I didn't watch any of them because I knew they'd be catastrophically bad. Even you agree?
No. The newest ones, the last three movies... The first one was fabulous. The second two.
No, the first one was okay.
Force Awakens.
I mean, I saw some of them.
Made me super happy.
One of them had Mark Hamill.
The last one
was
a joke.
Which one had Mark Hamill at the end?
Second and
that was the second one.
Oh, so I've seen one and two, and not the last one.
He's in more of. He's not just in it at the end. He's in the second.
Okay, well I've seen that one.
He's all through
The
Last Jedi, which is the second.
Yeah,
the
Last Jedi.
Okay, so the very last one. I saw the one where he had Laura Dern with a long neck. Which
that's,
one that?
That's the second one.
Right, and I think I couldn't bring myself. I was just so not impressed with those.
Well,
but I couldn't bring myself to watch the very last
you,
one.
You're happy about that.
I thought the last one wasn't that bad. I didn't like the middle one too much. I thought the last one was okay-ish.
Oh, by the
What's
way,
it called? Return,
there's another Death
Rise
Star.
Of Skywalker
oh, by the way,
for some reason.
Dead.
Quite
oh, another Death Star.
It,
I think that's what did it for me. That's what broke me.
No.
It's like, really? All your script writers got together and they went, right, okay, stick with us on this.
Yeah.
Another fucking.
But I
certainly
think they're an improvement on those ones. And no one knows about McGregor in.
Yeah.
Episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm. Those were really pretty bad.
Because they were just huge CGI.
No, the Sith one was pretty good.
Oh, the final one of those three. Wasn't bad. It was a big scrap. The first one was annoying. It seemed like a Disney movie ad for cuddly toys.
I love the fact that we're talking about these movies.
This is nothing to do with telecom, but
I know this isn't. Well,
Mary's a big nerd.
Anyway, so that's what Alexa would do for Mary if the AI was any good.
But immediately program Star Wars.
And like I said, there's nothing else. You know, they're going up against Samsung and Sony and LG and all these venerable
again
TV
another entire industry that has commoditized itself right into hell.
Yes, but that but that makes it all the more hard to be a new entrant.
That's right. They're
all trying to get into services.
It's important to keep in mind they don't care if this thing makes any money. They don't.
No, and they have come in at a competitive price point.
Yeah, I mean that's not Amazon's thing.
Of course not. It's not. It's not a profit center
never,
by itself.
No.
They just want you to be part of the Amazon Borg sort of system.
Yeah, the ecosystem, as I'm sure they would like to call it, you know. But I mean, they don't, any one of these line items in every aspect of every one of the meetings that they're in, I'm sure it's just like, this is a block of actions that we're taking for this following strategy. Yeah. And whether it actually has a positive or a negative number to it is irrelevant.
This is another way to infiltrate your brain.
Well, quite.
I'm not going to go that far.
Well, what I thought was interesting about it is it feels like, strategically, it feels like an extension of the Alexa strategy to me.
Mm. But
they haven't branded it Alexa. That's the interesting thing. They branded it Fire rather than Alexa. But I rather unhelpfully put in my headline, Amazon launches an Alexa telly.
But Alexa is the AI, so it's not the device itself.
But that's what we associate. All those, I don't know what they're branded, those smart speakers. I can't remember.
Echo. Yeah, you said have an Alexa.
But we think of them as Alexas, don't we?
Yeah.
I think that's the brand more than Echo. Anyway, and so I wrote in my penultimate paragraph, I said, so reliant is Amazon on Alexa as the key feature that the press release even went on to explain the kind of stuff you could ask this telly to do, such as, quote, Alexa, what should I watch? Which will then save you the hassle of even having to choose something to mong at for the rest of the evening. And then I wrote, quote, Alexa, what am I doing with my life? Was not one of the list of suggestions, but it should have been. That made me laugh, and my dad laughed at that.
I think you need to start putting in
it.
Interpretations of the words that you use that are so completely
like mong
slang.
Yeah, that wouldn't be known to an American audience.
It wouldn't be known to anybody. Okay, it's hilarious.
So anyway, so that's that thing. I mean, before I quickly move it on, do you think you buy an Amazon telly?
No.
Would you buy an Amazon telly? Pierre, Amazon telly? So, I mean, part of the reason, I presume, certainly for the people who are massively invested in the Apple ecosystem,
exactly.
Does that apply to all three of you?
The main reason I wouldn't buy an Amazon telly, actually, is nothing to do with worries about them infiltrating my brain. It's just Samsung makes really good quality TVs, and they know all about all the high-quality, you know, 8K.
So you're
going to
buy a TV for the TV's sake?
No, I'll buy a TV so I can get a really good image quality.
Yeah.
Like,
and anyway,
for the TV's sake,
our whole entire body can't process 8K images anyway.
I'm sure it's within Amazon's ability to do that. But hey, we know what we're getting with Samsung, don't we?
Yeah, so, exactly. I mean, I'm Samsung all around for my TVs. Yeah.
And I wouldn't buy it because I don't want anything to do with Alexa in my house. Fucking listening to me. It listens to you just
all the time. Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, no, when I've left it on in the
allegedly, the listen, it's a buffer. And they listen only for the prompt.
For the Alexa.
Hey, Alexa.
But it's still got to be listening.
But it discards.
Because I'll be saying something that's completely not Alexa, and I'll hear dun-dun, you know, and I'm like, shut the, you know, and I immediately go and I'm like.
Yeah, I'm just not going there. Okay, and then the other thing that's launched, which I think is even more scary, is Facebook has teamed together with Ray-Ban sunglasses.
Oh, sorry for the mention, I have the recap at 3:45.
Oh, shit, I better get a move on then. Okay, I'm going to make this a monologue then, Facebook. You two. Sorry, because he's got to do something. Facebook's launched... my headline was Facebook launches a pair of spy shades. And it's got in partnership with Ray-Ban, which is obviously the cool shade, American shade company.
No, Italian.
They are Italian.
Are they?
Luxottica.
They were both by Luxottica.
Mm-hmm. But it's
evil,
an American brand, isn't it? It's an American brand.
Yeah,
it's
nothing about it is American.
Right, you want me to hurry up and now you're being pedantic and getting in my face.
I just want you to be correct.
Yeah, I just want you to be quiet.
Yeah.
And and basically you've got these connected glasses, and they've got little cameras in each of like the bits around here, and so you can just go around. We can be chatting. We could be in a pub. I could be like, Mary, you know, what's going on in your private life? Yeah. And I could be filming.
Yeah.
It's like the Snapchat ones.
And they've got a tiny little LED, which you could obviously just stick a bit of blue tack in or something like that, that indicates you're filming. Or you could just not tell anyone that. You could just go, yeah, it's a really cool feature.
Just mark it.
And I'm just thinking...
I haven't seen this. This is, when you mentioned this, I had not heard of this.
Yeah, look, this is like what it looks like. And there's a little LED.
Oh, my God.
They're like Wayfarers.
I know, they're nice. I mean, they're nice shades,
they're Ray-Ban
shades. That's terrifying.
We'll see where it goes. They're about $300.
It's a no for you.
but I just think, you know, I know I'm among the more twitchy when it comes to, oh my God, big tech's trying to take over our lives. But this isn't even just big tech, although obviously everything you film on it presumably will then get handed over to Facebook to feed their algorithm. But... you know, when you think of how, you know, you must, like, as a more executive-level person, all corporations are shitting themselves about social media and the internet in general and just the potential for things to go Pete Tong. There's another one to put in your slang list. just when the slightest thing comes up on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And now you've got people can go around filming you surreptitiously
glasses on their face. Like, can you take this off, please? Yeah. Also, exactly. There's no sun here.
But any shades, well, that's in a way that makes it even more sinister that they've teamed up with Ray-Ban. If there was some real bullshit looking, no reasonable person would wear them, like the Snapchat ones that came out a few years ago, then you're like, there's something going on here. But if they look like normal Ray-Bans, that's a bit more creepy, isn't it?
But also, there's sunglasses, so it's only outside.
It really is concerning. I think every corporation is making decisions about which platforms to be on, which platforms not to be on. I mean, and let's face it, this is just another thing that a lot of corporations are just going to add to the pile of why not to be on Facebook. I mean, from a corporate media point of view, the safest place right now for anyone to be on is Twitter.
Really? That's saying something, because that's a goddamn car crash.
Yeah, but it's it is the least... I'll put it to you this way. Its influence seems to be democratized enough that you have a little bit more of an opportunity to manage your own message.
And defend your brand if the shit is
On some of these others, it's what you're with, right? Brand safety is the problem that you face if you go into Facebook.
Right.
My brand safety, and so what that means is how am I keeping my brand safe? Am I keeping my brand safe, putting it onto a platform that is potentially going to... Right.
So it's control of the negative contagion.
That's right.
And that sort of thing.
That's right. So Twitter has less of that, you know.
All right, I've got a button, but that's good as well. Cool. Okay, we've gone on for like about an hour and a half, haven't we?
Yeah.
It's all my fault.
No, it's good. It's great to have you on.
Oh, I love being on. It's awesome.
And please do hang around after.
Yeah.
Traditional post-podcast.
Absolutely. And, you know, and he's made a little tower.
A little tower of brew dogs.
I've got my little Camden House.
I'm ready to get my cans in the bin because I will be racing off to this.
Oh, yeah. You've got to go, haven't you? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening, and make sure you join us for the next one.